Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Yesterday we talked about the future of the automobile and what that's going to look like. Today I wanted to talk about the service industry. For those of you that are not flying around in private jets that people take care of your cars for you, etc., etc., etc. You have a new car every 2 years, so never mind servicing it anyway. For those of you like me and everybody else, I'm fascinated by the dichotomy between people that take their cars to the dealer exclusively and people that take their cars to an independent exclusively. Now, full disclosure, I've worked for both. Mostly in Highline, I've worked with Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, Bentley, Rolls-Royce on the service side, as well as others. And on the independent side, same models and makes, as well as Porsche, BMW, and Ford, Honda, in fact. So I see it from both perspectives, and I can't help but notice that, and we're talking about out of warranty. If your car's in warranty, of course you take it to the dealer. That makes all sense in the world. But once it's out of warranty, how do you think of as the service department? Let me rephrase that. What is your relationship with servicing your car? Some people that are car guys that have their guy, their person in the service department, or a shop for this, a shop for this. This really isn't aimed at you, though. I would be curious for your input. This is really more for the people that have a shop they go to and you blindly trust that they're taking good care of you, or you only take it to the dealer and you blindly trust that they're going to take care of you. And what research did you do ahead of time? Do you put in any effort to make sure that they didn't completely screw you? Because in either scenario, the possibility is there. When there's a possibility, it must be happening some of the time. I saw the dealer side. I won't name names. But there are certainly people that work either for dealerships or for independents who view their paycheck as taking money out of your pocket and putting it in theirs. And the more, the better. And I've seen those people transition from dealerships to independents and back and forth. So it makes me wonder, if you've got a 5, 6, 7 year old car and you only take it to the dealer, you know you're overpaying, okay, but you justify that by what? They have better trained technicians. I can tell you that's not the case. I hire the technicians regularly. I hire guys from the dealer all the time. And I put it on my social media as we have dealer trained or factory trained technicians. So that's not it. Is it oversight? Is it because you feel that the manufacturer is looking over their shoulder and making sure they're doing things correctly? Which there's certainly some truth to that, but not as much as you would think. On the exotic car side or the luxury car side, which is what I'm more familiar with, the relationship is closer between the customer service writer, service manager, rep, that person, the job that I do, and the client. I'll give you an example. I had a customer. He's passed away now, so I don't mind using his name. His name was David Walters. He lived in Hawaii and had a lot of cars. I believe it was over 120 cars. I was running Ferrari Maserati service, so we took care of his Ferraris and Maseratis. He had two separate guys taking care of his cars. My relationship was new, both with Ferrari as well as our warranty rep, so I didn't really understand how Italians do things, and this is why I like telling this story. David Walters brought in, or his guy Richard, brought in his Ferrari 575 Super America. If you're not familiar with what that is, it's a 2005-ish model front-engine V12 Ferrari. Ferrari likes to do these kinds of things where when they're getting ready to blow out one of their models to replace it with a new model, which in this case would have been the 599, they do something trick and cool and interesting to it because they've got to create some sort of buzz and some sort of collectability around it. The car's been on sale for 5 to 7 years. you've got to figure it out. So what they did in this case is they chopped the top off, but not in the traditional sense. They made it a carbon fiber and glass motorized flip roof where it looks like a targa, but it's not. It does give you the top-down feel, but it's not a convertible in the traditional sense. And these roofs were what they called revochromico, which is electrochromic, which also doesn't help explain it. Basically, you turn an electric dial, and they would go opaque or clear. So it would go from moonroof to sunroof, that kind of thing. And super cool technology, very interesting, ahead of its time. Worked okay for a minute, and then if the car sat outside in the sun for any amount of time, and I think even if it didn't, these things would all get hazy, and the chemistry would screw up. So it would look like it was sunburned, and this happened to all of them. I forget how many they made. It wasn't very many. Might have been in the 50s or 100s. But they all did it. So Richard comes to me with this car and says, look, I know that this car is out of warranty, and it was a special edition, and they have a 2-year warranty instead of a 3-year warranty at the time. But we have a lot of Ferraris. We spent a lot of money with you. Make it happen. Okay. I'm borderline ignorant, actually truly ignorant in the exotic car world as a service writer. It was my first job as a service writer. My first job, yes, was Ferrari Maserati. That's a story for a different time. And I contact our warranty administrator for North America, and we start chatting. And I tell him this problem. Of course, he's aware of it, and he knows that all the collectors from Russia to Saudi Arabia to China, what have you, they're all having this issue, and they're all up in arms about it. So he says, great news. We're on top of this, which in Italian speak means nothing at all. We're going to fix the problem, but you've got to understand that we use an outside company to manufacture this. They're not in business anymore. We've got to figure out what the problem was. We've got to re-engineer it, find somebody else to manufacture it, and then send it out to people. But if you keep it hush-hush, you'll be on a small list of people that get it warrantied because of the collector status of the owner. Great. So I call Richard. I'm the hero. Hey, you know, give me some time, which they were, of course, it's Ferrari. They understand how that works. Give me some time. I will take care of it for you. And that's how I phrased it. I'll take care of it for you. First mistake. Some time goes by, and I won't use the warranty administrator's name because he might still be in the world, in the automotive realm, I mean. We meet at the unveiling of the Ferrari California at the LA Auto Show, the press day, which is the day immediately before the public first day. And we're chatting, and I don't usually bring up shop talk or business outside of work. So we're just chatting, yada, yada, yada. And he mentions, hey, great news. We're further along on this development. We're going to have the first 10 of these done within 6 months. It's going to be $50,000. Do you still want it? Obviously, when my eyes shrunk back down and I said, but you said you were going to cover it under warranty. And he said, yeah, but if we cover one, we've got to cover them all and yada, yada, yada. And we're not always right, but we're never wrong. Okay, fine. So here comes Monday, and I've got to call Richard and give him the great news. Richard has the same reaction I did, because now he's got to tell his boss, David, that yes, it's being taken care of. And I'm sure Richard said, hey, you know, we'll take care of it, blah, blah, blah. I made it happen. I'm sure he exaggerated a bit as well. So now he's got to tell the owner that $50,000, and that's just for the part, not including the labor, 6 months later, et cetera, et cetera. So where am I going with this? Where I'm going with this is this. I couldn't convince Ferrari to do things differently than they already decided to do. But we gave him the part of cost. We ate the labor, so it didn't cost us anything. He was a good customer. We had a good relationship, and we did it at cost, effectively. I think it ended up being something like $30,000. He wasn't ecstatic, but it was an us versus them, being me and David against Ferrari, versus David against me and Ferrari. And we established a relationship and moved forward and et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't happen to most people. Most people don't have collections. Most people don't have 120 cars with two guys take care of them where it's basically a wholesale deal. Most people come in, sit down with the service writer for maybe 10 minutes, probably less, tell the service writer the concerns, service writer writes it down, car goes into the back shop, into you don't know where, you don't know how, you don't know what's happening. You get a ride home or you take off, you get a phone call, car's all done, et cetera, et cetera. We found the problem. We weren't able to duplicate the problem. Here's what it's going to cost. Do you still want it? Here's some upsells. By the way, you need an alignment and some tires. Are you sure? Here's a photo. That whole game that we've all played. Where does that go in the next 10 years? I don't see the model that I just described as being scalable for people that are used to, for lack of a better example, I think this is actually terrible but kind of good, the Domino's pizza. You order it online, there's a little ticker, it shows you they're baking it, they're packaging it, it's out for delivery, you got it. That's what we're getting used to. Is that where service is going? Is that where you want service to go? Do you still want to have a face-to-face conversation? And by the way, this also applies to buying cars. Who, other than me and everybody I've ever talked to, is tired of pulling up to a dealership? There's two guys, three guys standing outside. There's five guys inside. They're like sharks. If you make eye contact, it's over. How can I help you? Let me give you for a ride. Let me sit you down. I'm not going to let you leave until you buy this car. CarMax kind of has a different model, but it still feels a little pitchy. Like they're trying to pitch you, sell you. They tell you they're not. Oh, by the way, dealerships are doing this now as well. I'm not on commission. I'm salary. Yeah, as though I don't understand how incentives work with any business place. I know really good service people and salespeople, and customers follow them because they have great relationships. They build trust. But a lot of those guys are dying out or getting older or retiring or moving up to management. And by the way, I'm one of them. People know me. People work with me for years. They follow me. They go, where are you? Can you still service this car? I try to get it in. Even if I'm at a Lamborghini store and they have a Range Rover, hey, if it's just an oil change, you know, let's see if we can take care of it. This is a good client. Maybe they'll have a Lamborghini in the near future. I still want to take care of them. But where does that go? Do you have the Uber pickup of service deals where you've got a third-party company that has an app on your phone that reminds you that you need an oil change, comes, picks up your car, either leaves you a loaner or let's say Uber's included in the fee, what have you, takes the car, services it at a independent shop, and makes sure on your behalf that that independent shop is doing what's necessary and only what's necessary. And because that independent shop works with this service, perhaps they have a wholesale discount that either pays for their services or gives you a break. I don't know. It's an interesting model to think about. And when they're done, it gets washed. They bring it back. It charges to your Apple Pay, Android Pay, yeah, 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 and you're done. I mean, I'm in the car world. I know what I'm talking about, and that seems convenient for me. That saves me time. That saves me worrying about it. Hey, do I need the super duper crazy awesome motor oil, or will the regular Mobil 1 oil work? What motor oil do I need in my car? It's going from spring to summer. I'm in Southern California. I'm in San Fernando Valley. It's going to be 116 degrees. Was the same oil that I was using when it was 40s 30s, 40s, 50s? Is that still appropriate for when it gets to 113, 114? Well, no. And it says so right in your manual, but you don't know that. I know that. But if I said, hey, for a nominal fee, I'll pick up your car, get it serviced, negotiate appropriately, make sure you're not getting upsold on stuff you definitely do not need. If you have a hole in the tire, hey, can we patch it? No? Okay, you might need a tire. But I know the difference. Hey, do you have an alignment problem? Or do these cars, like all BMWs wear their tires unevenly. It's just a fact. Alignment isn't going to fix it. Maserati does the same thing. A lot of German cars and German engineered cars are doing the same thing because there's a tighter turning radius and there's reasons. Tires wear unevenly these days. But every time you go to a dealership, they go, oh, your tires are wearing unevenly, you need alignment. And $300 later, they didn't really fix the problem. In fact, there's nomenclature in the industry with tow and go. They're just setting where the front wheels are pointing, so when you're driving down the freeway, it's going in a straight line. If they're doing a four-wheel alignment, they're doing camber caster and tow and doing it appropriately, and they can show you a before and after, and something was off, it'll show you. It's in a red. I mean, these computers are very simplistic. If that's what's happening, great. I'm not saying you never need alignment. You might have bent suspension components. You might have hit a curb. You might have hit a pothole. But there's some salesmanship there. And unless I'm there negotiating for you or looking over the shoulder or you show me your paperwork and I go, yeah, yeah, you're fine there. That guy took care of you. How do you know? Which takes me back to why do you go to a dealer versus dependent? I'm not saying either one is right or wrong. But where does this decision process come into play? You know you're paying more for a dealer. And by the way, when I run independents, like the last place I was at, it is the easiest thing in the world to pull customers away from dealerships because they don't deliver on the price point. They're the most expensive. They've got a beautiful facility, all the greatest tooling, the most expensive technicians, sometimes, not always, and they charge you top dollar. But there's no personal service, or rarely. You never really know if they're being honest with you, if what they're trying to sell you or upsell you is legitimate, or they just trying to make their bonus for the month. They don't call you until the car is done. I mean, this is your car, and in Southern California, your car is your baby. You live in that damn thing. And it goes to the shop, and the smart shop operator or service writer will call you within a couple of hours. Hey, we haven't touched it yet. Or hey, we've got it up in the air. Here's what we found. But most of them, they don't understand what customer service is. Customer service is setting expectations and then communication. That's it. It doesn't get more complicated than that. Hey, it's 8:00. You're dropping off your car. I'll call you at 10. You call them at 10. You got to deliver, right? So give me some feedback, guys. Let me know your thoughts. A lot of the people that are going to hear this are car people, and you're going to say, well, I'm not worried about it because I know. Well, but what about your wife? What about your girlfriend? Your aging parents? If you've got kids or if you're ever going to have kids, what about your daughter or your son later down the road? What do you want their experience to be like? Where do you see the industry going? Anyway, let me know, guys. I'll have another one of these podcasts soon. I'm going to keep changing around, not topics, but maybe themes. We'll have guests, of course, and we'll do other things. And we'll talk motorsports, and we'll just chit-chat and kind of narrow down what you guys are looking for and where this thing should go. I'm excited. Take care.